What's with these damn ducks? What? You know, I need to get my ducks in a row. All lined up, something for the portfolio, so I can help the business grow. Oh, I see. Well, here, let me show you a finance channel that'll know the answers to your questions and everything you need to level up, you know, to get these damn ducks in a row.
Hello.
Hey, Marco. I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well.
Thank you so much for being here. So we're just picking up where we left off from our last conversation. It's been a few days, but I still remember everything I want to ask. Selfishly, it's going to be mostly questions that I have about my situations and things I want to learn more about. So starting multiple businesses at the same time, I don't recommend it because it's hard to focus on several things and your competitors may just be focusing on that one business. So they're going to outperform you because you have too many eggs in one basket. But I want to start multiple businesses at once. Do you completely advise against it? Wait till I get one stable. But I don't want to do that either. What do you recommend?
I can't say with 100% certainty that I advise against it. However, I would highly recommend that you try not to do more than one business at one time. There are some exceptions. One exception I would have is if you, when we're talking about a completely new business startup. Okay, so I wouldn't advise complete new business startups, particularly if it's in industries that you're not as familiar with or you wouldn't consider yourself as an expert in. But primarily the one exception, so I would say I'd highly advise against it because you need to really focus on your craft and that business to get it to the point where it's being run almost as an automation or where you've gotten your revenue streams set to be certain. The exception would be if you're taking over an existing business model that is running itself and has appropriate management team and staff and continue it, then you would at that point in time have dashboards in place to where you can look at the how it's functioning. So just like a dashboard in the car, you know how much gas is in it, you know the mileage, you know if it's running hot, the temperature gauge. So for a business, you need to have a dashboard that will signify, give you signals as to the health of that business. So looking at revenue, looking at costs, expenditures of various categories, such as HR, your cash flows, whatever, bless you, whatever as it relates to that particular business, you want to have a dashboard of those various gauges to determine if the business is healthy or not. So that needs to be done for each business, albeit a new startup or taking over a business. So I've been trained on dashboards through small business administration classes, but I unfortunately have not utilized dashboards like I should have. I just look at, you know, money. If we have more money coming in than going out, but there are other indicators and dash and gauges you should put in place for your business early on to determine if your business is heading in the proper direction. Because if you have these various gauges in place to determine the proper direction, you're going to know if the business is running hot or not in relation to a car. You know, you see the temperature gauge constantly rising faster than it should, and it gets in the red, and you know the radiator is going to pop. So you want to have those gauges in place for each business to determine if you're heading in the right direction. And it's very difficult to do that if you have multiple businesses going on at once, particularly from a startup, because you may not necessarily know what those gauges are for a startup business. You have to determine those factors in a business to see if those factors are going to be good indicators of the health of that business.
Right.
Yeah.
You were able to do the snowball stand and the income tax office because they were both kind of seasonal and it was easy to stagger them both. So
correct.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So I was doing them the same year and there was very little overlap. So as I was actively engaged in the income tax business from January till April, as the income tax business was waning in March, I started planning for the snowball business, getting my supplies, and I took the revenue from the snowball business, from the tax business, and put it to the snowball business. So I had the income, the revenue there, the cash flow there to fund the snowball business. So as I start spending the money, the profits from a small portion of the profits from the income tax business to start the snowball stand, by the time the snowball stand started, income tax was done. And then the snowball business was ending in September, then it was time to start planning a month later for the upcoming income tax business. So that was perfect, a perfect duality. It had very little to no overlap.
Okay. But I have known you to own, be a part of several businesses at once. So none of those were started at the same time.
Correct.
Really?
So, correct.
So someone would pull you into, go ahead.
So none of those were started at the same time. What happened in those situations where I had multiple businesses at once, some of which were started from the beginning, others that were purchased. I had one business that did exceptionally well that earned millions and millions of dollars. So I was looking for places to invest that money. So I started buying other businesses while I still maintained my primary business, or I attempted to start new businesses while I maintained my primary business. So there was a lot of overlap. However, as I was buying new businesses or starting new businesses, I did not learn the ins and outs properly of each business, each new business, nor did I create the proper rapport with the existing staff of businesses that I purchased, nor did I set up the proper management team that had the proper management style for an owner like me, which was to be for me not to be a micromanager, right? So I wasn't trying to be present at those businesses. So going back to the gauges, I failed to set up the proper gauges to monitor those businesses. I depended on the staff, the management team, to do the right thing and properly manage those businesses and report back to me verbally. And the gauge I got was everything's good over here. That's not a good gauge to take someone's word. Everything's fine. Everything's good. There are gauges that should be independent. They should be very objective. Gauges should be very objective, not subjective. And the gauges should basically depend based upon numbers, right? And you have numbers and you set PAR levels or minimums that you need to hit. And just like with a temperature gauge in a car, when the temperature is rising in the car, it gets to a point where it shows an area that's red, in the red, which is bad. In business owners needs to have in their gauges set for their various businesses. Each gauge needs to have maybe a yellow zone to say, okay, we need to watch the expenditures. We need to watch the amount we're spending on HR, paying overtime. We need to watch the amount of waste or loss in our business that we have from, if it's manufacturing, a yellow zone area to now you need to focus, give attention to that. And then you need to have a red, say this is the area we don't ever need to go into, or if we get into the red, we need to try to halt or stop or pay emergent attention to that item, that specific item, and focus on correcting that error. If I were to do things all over again, that's what I would do in my user experience. But one of the things that spoiled me was that I had one primary business that made so much money that I could stand the loss, but that still, it's still idiotic of me to accept the loss when I could have paid the necessary attention and set up the proper tools to prevent those losses. Because I was like, oh, if I have a loss on this business, then it'll be a, you know, I get a tax write-off and have a net operating loss, but it's still not worth the amount of money I could have earned. The net operating loss is never worthwhile, the amount of monies that you can earn or have saved in the long run.
Okay. The only gauges that I can think of for myself right now with starting this new platform, the only gauges I can think of is profits, subscribers, and followers. Do you have any gauges for every business owner across the board? Like, profits is obviously one. Would employee retention be one? Like, if you have a massive turnaround, like something's probably wrong there. Like, what do you, could you come up with something that any business owner needs to use as a gauge?
So I would ask you to bookmark that question to allow me to touch on it a bit more, but let me speak a little bit on it, but definitely bookmark what gauges I would recommend for your business for Damn Ducks. But when you talk about profit, do profit slash loss, because profits aren't guaranteed, right? You want to look at turnover, staff turnover. You want to look at probably something related to subscribers, subscriber turnover, subscriber loss, to something that affect. And what I'll do as an aside, I'll ask you a few questions pertaining to your business model, and then I'll work with you to determine what other gauges you may need, and we'll discuss them in great detail on one of the next interviews as well.
Thank you, I appreciate it. So back to buying a business, I thought about buying a business, but the businesses in my price range don't seem kind of worth it. In addition to that, I feel like being in the right place at the right time is more important than the business. Like you and the, when Corona and you selling PPE, you were in the right place at the right time to make really good profit margins. So when I think about buying a business like a car wash or a laundromat or, you know, something along those lines, I always wonder, like, is it just going to be a headache? Is it just going to be, you know, something that has like a little trickle in income, but the reward might not be there. I go back and forth about buying like a cleaning service or something like that. What do you recommend on buying a business that's already established? I want to know about that. And what business would you not buy or would you not go into again?
Okay, so regarding buying a business that's already established, looking at some of the mistakes I made, and that's why I think to your viewership, the significance to them is me talking about my many failures versus then my successes, because of the fact that I don't want, you know, people out there to make the same mistakes I made, right? So utilize that, have, you know, that's an added value to this. So your question about which businesses you should buy and shouldn't buy, or how you do it. So what you shouldn't buy, I can't explicitly say what you should not buy as far as type of
restaurant.
Well, I wouldn't even say that.
Really?
I thought of that, but I wouldn't say that. Because there's a number of factors for every business. But here's what I can say about buying a business. One, don't do it rushed. Okay? Don't rush. Take your time. Get to know the seller who's selling the business. Get to know the owner of the business and our owners. Try to find out as much background information as far as what is their why? Why are they selling the business? So for me, if it's been a long-standing business within the community that has a significant number of customer base, and they're selling because probably some of the reasons the owners are getting older, they don't have any children or family members to pass the business along to, because this younger generation now, they don't want to work. They don't want to run businesses that their parents had. They want to be Instagram superstars and all this other stuff instead of work. So those more than likely would be good opportunities. If there's a major life change in the business owners, there's a divorce and it was a husband wife type thing. Those type businesses you tend to maybe be able to get a great deal on as well, because there's some personal things going on and they need to separate and get the cash out of it. But also, depending on the industry, find out, who the competitors are in that market. For example, in pharmacy, I bought a bad business deal where I'll give you two examples of my negative experiences where I was rushing to buy a business, which was harmful to me. And this example may be helpful to your viewers. Buying a business from someone who owns those other related businesses may not be good. So here's two examples where I made some mistakes. So I purchased from a guy some FedEx ground delivery businesses. So he had 10 routes, 10 FedEx routes in one city. I purchased half of them. And of course, I guess I would do the same thing. He sold me the 5 worst routes he had, meaning the businesses that made the least amount of profit for him. Mm-hmm. They were on rural routes that you'd have to take the trucks out. He sold me his trucks that were his worst, oldest trucks, and so on and so forth. So another example related to that is a guy owned multiple pharmacies and he sold me one of his pharmacies. Well, what he did was he just rerouted his patients to his main pharmacy, even though they were on opposite sides of the town. But it still, he owned other pharmacies. So he still had an opportunity to, reroute the customer base and make other money. So one of the lessons I learned the hard way is, if you're going to buy a business from someone, buy it from someone where they're completely out of that industry. So I've sold businesses to people before. I did contracts with individuals in certain arenas, and they gave me a non-compete clause so that I would not take any of their business away, so on and so forth, which was very fair. And non-compete clauses can be done to a limit. There are some restrictions on it as well that the law allows, so that it doesn't prevent you from earning money in your field of expertise, but it just prevents you from harming the person that you just did a deal with. So for me, that's one of the lessons I learned, that if you buy a business, make sure that the person you're buying it from is completely out of that industry, or that they don't have something else that could cause harm to your business long term. Mm-hmm. Make sure they're selling with good intentions. Make sure that you conduct good due diligence. I would spend some time with them at their business. If there is a business, particularly you're utilizing a business broker, and find out businesses are for sale, get that information from the business broker. What's the name of the business? Where is the business located? And act as if you're not interested at all. Don't even let the business broker meet you. Definitely don't let the owners meet you, and go become a secret shopper at their business. If it's a dry cleaners, go by there, take your dry cleaning by there. Don't let them know you're interested in buying a business. Don't even let them know that you're aware that the business is for sale. Go there, hang out there, whatever the business is, as much as possible in a secret manner, to determine what the culture of that business is, to see if you want even to be involved with that culture. There was a pharmacy I was going to purchase once. Met with the owner. The owner offered me a fair price, but he wouldn't let me see the books, the financials, and all of that. on the business. He told me what it was, but he wouldn't let me see it. Okay, I didn't trust that. But then he also told me that, hey, I'm going to have to hang around the business for about 6 months. I'll help you out because my pharmacy staff, particularly the chief pharmacist, is an older white guy, and he's very prejudiced. And the seller, the owner of the business, was a white male. I knew his father, and I worked for his father when I was much younger. This is in an African-American neighborhood. But he said, unfortunately, the pharmacist that worked for him after his dad passed was very prejudiced. And he told me that, you know, he would not like the fact that a black man owned that business and that he was working for a black man. So he said he would sell it to me secretly.
Wow.
I would come by and I would have to pretend as if I was working there. And he would, the previous owner would be there until I was able to find a pharmacist to replace the prejudiced pharmacist. So, although I think the deal would have been okay, I just didn't like the culture and the environment related to, you know, the fact that even this pharmacy owner, who I felt was not prejudiced, would allow someone he knew was prejudiced working there. But I know he did it for financial reasons because he wasn't paying this prejudiced pharmacist very much money, not the market rate. But you know, you have those situations where you need to go in, check out the culture of the business, kind of, you know, be a secret shopper. I've done that at my restaurant where some of the staff didn't know who I was. I dressed a little differently, but that's some advice on buying a business. Also bookmark that as well. I give some thought to certain businesses I would not buy, but one of the focuses is get a business that you, it's easier for you to relate to, but it doesn't mean that you have to get a business that's like, for me, if I were to own future businesses that I would buy, I would want it to be something I would enjoy doing, or not necessarily working at, but enjoy being involved with as a customer, as a client of that business. However, if the business was strictly to create passive income, it was a very simple business model that I can create some very simple gauges to monitor the business from my computer. And when I say set up these gauges typically you can set up through your QuickBooks or whatever type of software you have. Or you can customize certain paperwork that you would want your management team or yourself to generate on your own. So there'd be customized gauges, depending on the type of business it was. But more of the financial numbers would be something that you could generate from QuickBooks. And I haven't looked in QuickBooks in a while. I typically have staff that do all that, but I was familiar enough with it to generate my own type of reports. So when I talk about financial gauges and numbers, I'm talking about, you know, you can actually create your own reports mm-hmm. in QuickBooks and Peachtree and all these other software. Many of them come with some standardized reports that most businesses utilize. So I would recommend all business owners to look at those standardized reports that most business owners use and see what fits them. But you can also play around with them and create certain reports or get them merged together to generate what's important to you in your business that can create those line items that can create red flags for your business.
Okay. How do you feel about franchises, buying a franchise?
Overall, I'd say I feel positive about franchises because it takes a lot of the research out of it. It takes a lot of the heavy lifting out of it. If a franchise model has been around for a while, I feel as if it's worthwhile paying that franchise fee to work out the kinks and the bugs of the business.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, in buying a franchise, the way I would do my due diligence, I would first ask the franchise corporation to send me various recommendations or referrals of other franchise owners that are in markets similar to my market, like with the same type of socioeconomic demographic, same general population and makeup. So in that case, you could go to the Chamber of Commerce in your city where you consider doing a franchise? And feel like a professor the way I'm breaking this down. Hopefully this is good stuff. Go to the Chamber of Commerce and find out the demographic information for your market or where you want to put the business. And then you can share that demographic information. And the demographics will show, you know, age, the mean or average age, or the various age ranges within the past 10 years, depending, you know, because it comes out every 10 years with the census. Racial makeup, ethnic makeup, socioeconomic status, types from like lower class, middle class, upper middle class, so on and so forth. But all this data, each chamber of commerce is supposed to provide. So I would take that demographic makeup and share it with the franchise and ask them for similar markets. Or you can take that demographic information and then find similar markets and then contact the franchise and said, hey, I want to know, you know, put me in contact with these franchise owners in these various cities. And then have, you know, very frank, direct conversations with them. If your time allows, go to those cities and spend time with them at those businesses. Because what you'll find out, most franchise owners, if you're relatable and easy to talk to person, they'll share the pros and cons about the franchise, franchisor, yeah. And willingly. But if you reach out to someone your own, because I'm sure if I owned was a franchise corporation, I'm going to send you some of the people that I know are going to speak well against me, well toward me. But if you can, you know, find some yourself, I'd get the list that they send, go talk to them, but then find people in similar markets that they didn't send a list to and speak with them about it, albeit even if over the phone, if you can't physically go visit them. But I, in general, I believe it will save you a lot of time. The amount of money that's spent on the franchise fee, I would try to negotiate that as well, particularly if it's a franchise that's been open for less than 5 to 10 years or less. And they may not be growing as rapidly as they like. So some things may be negotiable with them. But yeah, I typically think well about those. And there are various magazines such as Entrepreneur that push franchises, but understand that many of those franchises, they're paying for advertising. And I would go through Entrepreneur magazine over a period of 2 to 3 years and see if there's a franchise or a category of franchise that you're interested in. Look at various magazines over a 2 to 3 year period and see if those franchises that you're interested in have been around advertising for those years. Because I've seen some franchises, one of which I spoke to you about. I saw it one time like 2 years ago, and I haven't seen it pop up anymore. And I can't really get a lot of information on it. So that's kind of no longer an interest of mine because they're not easy to find. That's another thing. Make sure that when you go to their corporate website for the franchise, that the information is easy to find. It's out there. They're eager to provide you information. Their website is definitely promoting franchise, because if they're doing well, they're going to continue promoting their franchise opportunity. So I've seen some franchises like they put a lot of money in promoting it, and then you don't hear from them anymore. So yeah, that's a red flag.
All right. So I have a house that's been empty for like 4, 5, 6 months. I went and hired a property management company. They were like, oh, you need to fix so many different things. Here's a quote. We can get them fixed for you. And I looked at the quote and I was like, this is astronomical. My house is in bad shape, but there was pictures in the attachment. And I'm going through the pictures, and this wasn't my house. So I was like, oh, okay, human error. So I emailed him, and I was like, hey, this isn't my house. You know, could you send me, is this quote go with these pictures? Could you look into this and then get back to me? And he was like, oh, I'm so sorry. Let me resend it. So he sent me more pictures, And some of them were my house and some of them weren't. And I was just like, we're going to have to stop this relationship.
That was one.
Another rental property management company. He was just so ghetto that I was like, I don't know if I can deal with you. And so now I'm thinking about starting my own property management company. Like, how hard is it for me to find the guy with the messed up pictures? For me to find you, for me to sign a contract with you, for me to pay you up front, for us to get me set up on the portal and all this other stuff, and then you fumble the bag. I'm already a customer. I'm already there. But you couldn't even get me to the finish line because of your negligence and your disorganization. I just thought that was so tragic. And now I'm thinking about, because I need these services and it's so hard for me to find a property management company, that I would start a property management company.
So is it your perception that this would be a rather simple business for you?
I don't know enough about it to say either way, but I can give you the pictures of your house. I can do that. And I already have, I would be my first customer. I can trial and error things with myself. I don't think this would be difficult at all. I don't think it would be I don't know how profitable it would be. This seems like another business, like a cleaning company. I want to open another cleaning company too, but this seems like something that would only be profitable in bulk because the property management fees are so low. It's like it's a small percentage of what the rent is. So, but I need it for myself. What do you think?
So looking at the documentation that he provided you in the contract, have you thoroughly gone over that and say, okay, the services that they say they will provide, I can do that hands down. Me and my team can do that hands down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, and I know that you know your work ethic, and as compared to, I want to call him the buffoon, the guy who fumbled the bag, per se. You can say, okay, if he can get me as a client, then I know that I can do so much better. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a service-based business. It doesn't appear to be upfront cash heavy business. So right. I like those type businesses because I grew up poor and I didn't have a lot of working capital to start businesses. Even after just saving money after being a professional for a while, I had to have businesses that generated income almost immediately from whatever service or product I provided. Like that was more mm-hmm. than, you know, that was, you know, 50% or higher profit margin. So, yeah, I think it would be a great opportunity for you. I would look at other, this is what I would do. I'd do a little recon work. Contact other property management companies, even the big boys, the larger companies, some of which may not want to do business with you because they want a certain amount of number of properties or size mm-hmm. business, but try to contact them and get their contracts, get their information. I'd see what they list on their website, what services they provide, see which services you believe that you could comfortably provide, and then take the services that you don't think you can provide initially to see if that's something you would want to build up to.
Mm-hmm.
Say get copies of as many of the contracts or agreements that you can, review them, and pull from that those types of responsibilities and job duties that you believe that you and your team could easily perform, so that you can don't overpromise and underperform like this other gentleman did.
Right.
Would do. You kind of crawl before you walk, but I think because it's not a heavy cash outlay, you know, look at other websites of these various property management companies and find out which designs are easy to follow, because you want to think about your type of clientele. So I think in property management, you may have individuals who are like you, have a single home. They just don't want to have to deal with renters, right? That's kind of would be my category. It's, they can be a pain in the rear end. Is it, you know, are you going to focus on that? Are you going to focus with people that have multiple properties? Are you going to deal with commercial properties? Think of the, find out which types of categories are available. That's off the top of my head. That's what I'm thinking about. Single family home, multifamily home, commercial. See, there may be some other categories of property management that I can't think of, but you can find on these sites. And then decide, hey, this is going to be my area of specialty. So mistakes I've made in the past where I thought I could be everything to everyone, like with my income tax business. Initially, I was like, I can do income taxes for the average blue collar worker all the way up to people that own businesses. But those are two completely different monsters. So I realized after year two that I needed to focus on the lower income blue collar people that needed a fast turnaround, versus those individuals I needed to sit down for 4 or 5 hours with just to make a couple grand. In that time period, I could have made 10 grand with dealing with the quick 1040 easy clients that were just coming in and wanting to get a quick return. So decide what's conducive, what types of clients are more conducive to you as far as time saving and profitability. So it's a terminology I had in grad school, I'm trying to think of, but it's a correlation between the amount of time you have and the amount of money you make, that you always want to take that in consideration, because you don't want to work 10 hours to make, you know, $1,000 versus working 5 hours to make 8,000.
Yeah. Right. I think you might have talked me out of it. Uh-oh. for several reasons.
Okay.
Number one, and tell me if I need to change my mindset on this. I feel like I only have 3 to 5 years of work left in me. And then I want to.
What do you define as work? Because you always hear people say, if you do what you love, you're not really working. So the 10 years I was running Dumar, the beverage company, probably 7 or 8 of those 10 years, even after I took the company public, it didn't feel like work because that was my baby. It was a popular drink. I'm riding around in my lean vehicles. Even I was riding in one yesterday, and the little 20-something-year-old white kids trying to drive in beside me on the highway, trying to take pictures of my vehicle because they thought the logo was so cool. So that kind of thing, it didn't feel like work because it brought me joy, and it wasn't stressful to me. It was my baby. So what do you define as work? 3 to 5 years of work.
Okay. I don't want to have to do anything for money. I want to have money in the bank, in investments. I don't want to have to get up and make an income. And when people tell me, like you just said, you know, like find your passion, and if you find something you like doing, it's not work. Nobody's going to pay me to be an ice cream tester, you know, or a steak. I don't know. But I've never had a passion for anything I've done. It was just always a necessity. I've never had a business, a job, or anything that I was like really passionate about. Like, I belong here.
Okay.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, you did it strictly for the money and the opportunity to make money. It wasn't for love. Okay.
I'm here to work.
I would challenge you to Google search ice cream tasting and steak tasting and becoming a steak connoisseur, because it might be out there. You never know. But
here's another one of my they're not going to pay me enough to do that. 3 to 5 years is my max. So my next business, I feel like I want it to be a home run. I want it to be sellable. Something that's not so niche that it would be hard to sell. And I want to sell it and make a large profit and ride off into the sunset. Any recommendations in 2024? What kind of, and to me, I think it would have to be online. it would have to be something where you have this massive exposure. What do you think?
So I'm thinking, I wish I knew the answer to that, because we probably wouldn't be on this call now. We'd be doing it right now. But I'm thinking just metaphorically that it would be what they call one of these gig opportunities. It'll be something that's creative. The actual business itself may not be related to new products, but the concept, there will be some creativity to the concept. So just like, you know, with food delivery, you know, there's always been food delivery, but then the way that DoorDash and Instacart and all that did it to institute it and put on the app. So here I can give you some general senses of what would help you get to that 3 to 5 years and probably some of the characteristics of that business that I've learned from my many years of experience in various industries. The American people, we're lazy in general. Hope this doesn't offend anyone. We want instant gratification. Say that. I'll just say that we want instant gratification. Lazy or not, we want instant I'm not lazy, but I do want instant gratification. So we want instant gratification. So whatever business you did, if it made people's lives easier and it was affordable. So look at all the businesses that are become major billion-dollar businesses over the last 5 to 10 years. Amazon, it makes it easier for you to shop without leaving the house. And they make it easy for you to return things if it's not the right size or whatever. So that's killing out the malls, right? Like I said, Uber, Lyft, they make it easier to catch a cab or catch a ride or to go out and drink, right? So they can come right to your doorstep. You don't have to go stand outside in the cold or wait for anything. You can set the time, right?
You want to, can I pitch an idea to you real quick?
Sure.
Okay. So I've had this idea for years and I just was like, I don't know if that would, how would I? So I'm a single woman, right? And there's a lot to do. There's a lot of responsibility with your house, with your car, with work. It's just a lot. I wish there was one company where I can put my credit card on file. I could give them my address. I can trust them. And I could say, hey, I think I need my snow shoveled for the whole winter season. Someone would be out there shoveling early in the morning, first snowfall, you know. And when I get up and go to work, my walk is already shoveled. I can go to this place and say, okay, now I need somebody to come and clean my house. I'm at work, I'm busy, do it while I'm at work. So they would have to be very trustworthy. I need little minor things fixed around my house, my grass cut, where I can go to one place and get several different services. They have my card on file. Maybe it's a monthly membership type of a situation. And I would gladly pay for that. You know, I have like 3 cleaning companies that I rotate between. But one that I didn't go with, they were like, oh, can we come to your house and give you a quote? And I was just like, who has time? Like, come clean my house or not? Like, I don't want to, it just seems like it was overlapping. You know what I mean? Like, can you come give me a quote and then start cleaning? And they were like, no, we have to give you a quote. And I was just like, I'm not doing that. So if it was even cleaning out my car, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. So those type services, that something you said kind of hit me on the end. So you think about, like I said, these services that makes it convenient for people, right? So I've used Angie before to clean out my house. I had to fill out something online and explain everything I want clean. Luckily, they didn't ask to come by and give a quote because I'd have been like, who has time for that, right? But they did call. We did go over what I put down and they offered some additional things that I didn't think of, which was great. And so just even thinking about a cleaning service, look at what other companies do it and go through the process with them and see, oh, how can I make this better? Or they really have it down, but how can I compete with them? I just use their model. when you're talking about, you know, getting a snow shovel, you know, of course, that would be a seasonal business, right? So how would you get that prepped and set up for the season? But then look at the obstacles there. If there's a huge snowstorm, well, your snow shovelers, you're going to have them prepped in somewhere, and how they're going to get to the client. So you're going to have them dispersed throughout, because more than likely they're not going to be able to drive there most. It's going
to
be very difficult. You have to wait until the roads are clear. And
no, it's Colorado. We'll get them a truck.
That sounds like a valid idea, even though it is seasonal. Right. And then, but just how can you differentiate yourself from the competition? Or this is one thing I noticed once before. In a city that I was in, there was a major electrical storm and it knocked out tons of garage door openers. And there were three or four garage door opening companies there, but they were all booked, majority booked for weeks or a month in advance. And it was because that what I was told by many of the owners, and then I contacted many of the Votech colleges that taught that, they said that currently, this, once again, going back to this generation in their 20s, they don't want to work with their hands. They don't want to go to a Votech and learn basic skills, technical skills on how to repair things. So industries, very simple industries, such as garage door opening, repairing garage doors, there's a huge shortage. So when I utilize them, I found out that, you know, they pay their staff, they train them, and they pay them an hourly rate, $10, $12, $14 an hour. But the average garage door servicing is about $300 to $500 fee. So, and then they keep these guys on a really tight schedule. So it may take them an hour or two max to repair a garage door, that they may pay them, you know, $15 an hour. So it's $30, but the company just made $300 for their 2 hours of service. And then they're on to the next. But they can do four of those a day, services a day, minimally. They're getting an average of $300 per service, is $1,200. And they're paying the guy, you know, an 8 hour work day of eight times $15 an hour. You know, it's becomes a profitable business that you can ultimately, once you build your clientele, ultimately can sell that business. So in this conversation, think of these types of businesses. So I'm glad we're having these conversations, because the answer to some of your prior questions come to me. So if I were to try to get a business, so being in the Deep South, the AC, air conditioning is a must. You must get that, have your AC in. You know, sweltering hot for 6 to 8 months out of the year. So if you can have either purchase a reputable AC business or start one with staff that know how to repair AC, you don't have to, but you know how to market and get clients and can offer very good service, or any other type of service related to homeowners, because homeowners tend to have income to pay for the services. So that's as far as starting businesses. Look at technical colleges, Votechs, and see which electricity, what types of businesses do they, what types of programs do they teach, like electrician, plumbing, AC, HVAC units, heating and cooling. So you guys there in Denver would use both heating and cooling. Here where I'm at in the Deep South, the cooling would be the most important, because the heating season is so short here. It's only like 2 months of cold weather in the Deep South. But up there, you guys get probably, you know, almost at least 3 months of each, that are three months of extreme. And then those other lesser things, such as other repair services that are not common. And then once you can possibly do some synergies between a couple of them and cross-train staff. But I would focus on one area get a reputation in that, or purchase a company, because you'll have older people that have been in the garage business for years and they're like, okay, it's time to retire. And those are very simple businesses to purchase that you can have your passive income, managing, marketing, working from home on your own time until it became a sellable business. That's something I would consider.
So another thing that I don't like businesses that are too staff heavy because people are lazy, because people yes. are lazy. So it's hard to manage. It's babysitting. I don't want a heavy staff business either. So a service business to this magnitude, what we're talking about, might not be the go either, because just keeping it staffed is going to be difficult.
So I'm thinking you start smaller. You could have 3 to 5 gentlemen or ladies that don't mind doing it. There's some heavy lifting, but not extremely heavy. Some of mm-hmm. the garage door larger ones can be rather big and may require 2 people. But for the most part, you could have, 3 to 5 to 7 individuals. And once again, they're going out to different sites working. So the office would be very minimal, very small space, so it wouldn't require much of that. And also, from what I see in this business, and many things I come across just by normal usability, right, is that they don't sit around and have a warehouse full of supplies for repairing garages. So it's on a case-by-case basis. They go out, they have a contract with suppliers or manufacturers, because each client you go out to may have a different brand garage door opener. So that something needs to be repaired, okay, we can contact Craftsman or this place or that place. You may go to local Home Depot or can order it overnight. So you're not keeping inventory. So you can go in, and many times your quote may be $100 to go just see what they have, and the people may not want to get it repaired at all. But you just paid your guy $15 to go out there, and you just made $85 profit, and he's on to the next person.
Right.
But keep in mind, you still do have to find staff that enjoy what they're doing, or make enough money, and they're not overly ambitious. So I would still consider that as a low staff. If you can get some very dedicated individuals, 3 to 5, and that can keep your income rolling in with very minimal expenses.
You're helping me narrow my focus, because I'm thinking about, while you're talking, people want instant gratification. And I'm thinking about how much money I spend on Amazon and how much money I spend on DoorDash. It's ridiculous.
Right.
So random story. I was looking, and I know you don't have a lot more time, so I'm going to.
No, you're good. You're good. Okay. No, I'm good. We're good.
So I was looking for a dog groomer, right? And I was calling all these companies. I find their number online, and I'm calling them up, and I'm like, hey, my dog thinks, and they're asking me all these questions, like, what's his breed? What's his temperament? Things you should ask. And then they would be like, oh, we're booked out until mid-January. And I was like, my dog stinks now. And I went through this over and over. So when I would call, I'd be like, what's your soonest availability? And sometimes they would tell me, and sometimes they were like, wait, we have questions first. So I find an app on my phone for mobile dog groomers. So I just put in my information, my dog's name, his breed, his hair length, and all this other stuff, and you can book it on the app. I booked it that same night for 7 p.m. And a mobile dog groomer, like a van, parked in front of my house, had the water and everything, and I, shushed him outside, and she took him, and 30 minutes later, he's clean, he smells great, he's happy, he has like a little bandana around his neck. It was amazing. Now, anytime he throws up, I'm like, And I'm probably bathing him a lot more than he needs just because of the convenience factor, just because it's so easy to do, just because it's so simple. And you can get whoever's available, or you can get the same person that you had last time. But it's like, you know, that day, you can book the person that day, that night, that evening, which works really good for my life and my schedule.
So think about a lot of times in starting a business, many times, just like with you, think about what happens in your day-to-day life. There may be certain services you need, and you're like, hey, this would be great. I would need this. I'm sure there are thousands of other people in this area that would need that as well. I'll give you an example of another business that I owned, or should I say I invested in, because I invested in a number as well. So I had an extra vehicle, and this is well before Turo, because I see Turo does that now, where people have vehicles and they lease them out using that app, right? So Turo is another idea, another type of company that I'm thinking about, this thought process of, hey, people have extra vehicles. So I had a luxury extra vehicle once, and I had an agreement to lease it out to a car club, right? So this was a passive income, and I could afford luxury vehicles, and I had them in various cities, didn't have to drive them, didn't really like driving many of them, and most of them I purchased because my accountant said, you need to spend X amount of money, or else you're just going to be giving it away to government and taxes. So since I rarely drove them and people admired them, I had a contract with the car club. They pay the insurance on it. That took an expense away from me. And then they paid me. And they paid me an additional fee each time someone utilized it. But I say that to say that's ultimately kind of how Turo had for individuals that had more than one car wanted to make income. And I think I lost part of my train of thought, but it goes back to your dog grooming service. Think of those businesses and services that you would utilize that others may deem as noteworthy services or something that's worthwhile. And that's how, once again, a lot of these gig businesses come about. Things that you would normally utilize. And I think if you sit around and think back through some things that can make your life more convenient that you would pay for. And that's how you create those one-off businesses, particularly if they're creative enough and they're duplicatable. You can duplicate them and show others how to duplicate them. And then you coin that or copyright it, trademark it, all those things, protect it. That becomes your sellable item, that business model. So the business that I made the most money from, tens of millions from, was not the actual practice itself, but how to manage and upsell that particular business model. So the marketing aspect of it. And I then would utilize it at various other businesses and say, hey, I'm going to show you how to increase your profitability in this particular area. So this is a service I'm providing, right? So if you're an expert in a particular business and you did well working for another company, and you can show other companies how to do well in that business. So I know you've, and then once again, this is a conversation, you've been in the service business for cleaning services, right? Mm-hmm. So was there an aspect of that you thought really well for you that many people don't know about? So then you maybe can take that idea and concept, package it up and say, hey, I have this opportunity for your cleaning service. Is there some things that you'd like to do to make more money for your cleaning service? I can show you how to do that. Give me a percentage of any gains I show you how to make. So this is more so for people that have done other types of business or are experts in certain area. That's where I made a large chunk of my money in pharmacy practice, showing other pharmacy owners how to increase their profitability from one particular area that they lacked, which was marketing and networking and relationship building with healthcare practitioners, as well as with their patient base, customer base. So.
Okay. Yeah. All right, Marco. Thank you so much for agreeing to hop on today.
No problem.
That cleared up a lot for me.
Yeah. I look forward to having more discussions, because each time we talk and you share your ideas and questions, It reminds me of things that I've done. It almost encouraged me to want to go back into certain businesses again, but I just want to win the lottery and just be rich or do something like that. You know, go back to the old getaways. Let me win the lottery and be done. But no, I do see opportunities to get involved in some other semi-passive income businesses where it requires very little effort. You know, one thing I realized in my 20s and 30s, and you may can relate to this, and for some of your viewers out there, I know when I was younger, I wanted to be involved in businesses just to say I owned a business. I wanted to be involved in business to say I'm this entrepreneur. As I've gotten older, I wish I'd have spent my time more wisely and focused on businesses, not based upon prestige, but focus on cash wise based businesses where I could make a lot of money so that by the time I was in my 30s or 40s, I didn't have to worry about working. I just wanted to do it many times because of the ego and the prestige. So I caution everyone to understand your why for doing a business. And if your business why is not based upon financial gain and being comfortable, and it's focused more so on egoism, prestige, how you want to look, then going to be much more difficult to maintain a business because you're going to be making decisions based upon emotions and subjectivity, based upon how you look, not about the facts and the data and the objectivity of the business. So, you know, it was cool for me to say I own this business or that business at once. But I need to have a better why that makes good business sense. So I caution people on that. I just thought about that, how I wasted a lot of time doing so. So when I did my snowball stand, I did it my why because of my daughter. It gave her a good opportunity to learn business to see if she would naturally become an entrepreneur. She didn't, but it was cute. It wasn't cost me a lot of money.
She hasn't yet.
Right.
Yeah.
But I thought that she was going to be inspired to do so. And it gave my family members something positive to do. I think it was very productive for my two aunts that helped raise me. It improved the quality of their life, not because of the money, but because they really enjoyed it. It brought joy to their lives to have a small business in the community that they could run. And things of that nature, but it wasn't to my detriment. So it maintained itself. I didn't make a lot of money, if any, from it, but it at least paid for itself, and it had a good value add to the family, that nice. Particular business. But there were other parts of the chain that, like, was in the mall or on a busy street in a larger city that may not have yielded as much profit, and the why wasn't as great as the why as the initial snowball stand that was in our small hometown. Just make sure the why lines up properly.
Nice. Not just to be cute, I guess.
Exactly.
No.
Or just to have this fancy business card to say that you have this business, right?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Marco. I really appreciate your time. And I can't wait to do this again. Hopefully we can get something. Hopefully we can get something on the schedule where we can do this fairly regularly, maybe like weekly or something like that. I think that would be good.
Yeah, I agree. Time flew by, and this was very easy. It's getting easier the more we do it. So just a good conversation. Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate you. You have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye.